This is our two of the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Caller says, good morning, Donal. I've been sitting in Letterkenny University Hospital's emergency department since yesterday evening. It's an absolute nightmare. I must have accidentally drank a bottle of invisible ink. I'm still waiting to be seen. That's from Jim. Donal calling his other half my beloved Big Dote, says a caller. Thank you. She'll like that. Morning, for the love of God, enough about Oasis. What if they're reforming? Sick of hearing about them. I mean, they're just a pop band who obviously need the money now. I'm going along with a lot of that. Not sure they need the money, but hey, you never know. Caller says the price of insurance has gone mad. Is this the government paying the people coming in? No, insurance should have nothing to do whatsoever with government policy. Insurance prices should be set by insurance companies based on levels of risk, which are based on numbers of claims. It shouldn't have anything whatsoever to do with government policy. Caller says the lights are not working at Polestar Roundabout. I went through them at around 5 o'clock, notified the guards. They said they knew. Still not working at 6, and I didn't see one guard there to direct traffic. A complete free-for-all. Now, another caller says, where were the Gardaí yesterday? They should have been out directing traffic. Another caller says, look, we're obviously better off without them. I think they should be switched off every Friday. It'll stop the congestion on the busiest day for cars. Another caller says, how is it the ESP have the privilege of maintaining street lighting when there are very good electrical contractors don't even get the chance to tender for this work? Caller, I do not know what the basis of tendering is. I do know the maintenance of street lights does go out to contract, and it goes out to tender, and suitably qualified tenderers can tender for that job. Now, I don't know what the conditions of tendering are, what the qualifications, the tax requirements, etc., etc., but it's certainly not a monopoly of the ESPs or any other electricity company. It is a contract, and we know indeed that Donegal County Council has been going through the tender process, and we're between contracts even as we speak. Caller says, could you highlight this and find an answer for me? Both my children were scrutinised down to the last penny when they applied for Susie grants, that says student grants. They've been refused and offered the bare minimum, just about covered fees, as myself and my partner work. As returning immigrants ourselves who lived abroad for 20 years, this is nothing to do with immigration. This needs to be highlighted to the media and not hidden from the general public. To accuse ordinary people of being far right isn't going to cut it anymore. When is this gravy train going to stop and treat all citizens, including genuine immigrants from any part of the world? It is a disgrace. And that comes amid a number of claims about preferential treatment being given to students coming in from abroad, while students coming in of Irish parents are not being given the same treatment. And that's the perspective of a caller. You can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Email comments at highlandradio.com. You can call us 074 91 25000, 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. And we're live on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, and also live on our Facebook pages at Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sport. Two quick comments, then we're going to go to a caller on line one. I used to visit Letterkenny twice a week. I now only go there when I really have to, such as hospital appointments or other medical checkups. It's just too much hassle trying to get in, and the same issue trying to get out. Strabane and Derry are my current shopping options. Another caller says the port light, the lights at the Polestar out of order. The sign warning drivers is on the ground and it's not visible enough, especially as some lights are working so as to give the wrong impression. Now, a lot of people saying, look, they hurry up and get the lights sorted and get the lights fixed. Others, as we've heard, are saying, do you know what, lads? Leave them off. It's working better. Let's go to Mark, who's on line one. Mark, good morning.
Good morning, Donal.
Mark, you belong to that latter group. You believe, do you know what, perhaps we're better off where we are today.
Yes, Donal, there's times during the day they wink a bit two or three times out that road, and you're wasting time sitting queuing in traffic. Whereas Friday evening there, when I came on the roundabout, the lights were out. It was, sure, you're watching first when you go on the roundabout, because you're just waiting to see somebody else coming straight out. But after about two rungs around the roundabout, the roundabout's back to working the way it was before the lights went on it. Everybody's just been cautious, but more cautious driving towards it. But once they get to it, they just treat it as a normal roundabout. Whereas before, the lights turns red, and when everybody's waiting for the traffic to move, the first thing they do is they reach the phone, they're scrolling through phones, and then the traffic's been held back and it's moving and forward. It's crazy. With the lights out, there's no phones in the hand. The roundabout's working the best, and I think it should be left the way it is. This morning there, any approach road I came at from this morning, there's no traffic at all. It's still the same there all morning long. And normally with schools being back and everything else in the Monday morning, the traffic was put out as far as my father's premises of work there, out at Thomas Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
It can be tailed back to as far as there. But today there's no problem at all. Just people need to be a wee bit cautious when they're on it, but treat it as a normal roundabout.
You don't find then that, because as I said, when I hit it, and I hit it yesterday evening, I found myself slightly concerned, because if you're hitting it from, say, the Polestar direction from the four lane, and you're heading out toward the Remelton Road, out towards Tommy Keys there, I found that middle lane that you go into now to do that, I found it sort of keeping further in. I wasn't quite sure exactly where I was going. I found that a bit off-putting. You say after two or three runs, you just get the hang of that, and you go back to where you were.
No problem. You just go back to where the only extra lane you have really is the lane turning in left there for the DT Blaney. You've got straight ahead, or you've got the road to turn to your right.
Mm.
And then the roundabout's that well lined now, you're able to follow yourself around, follow your road around the roundabout, no problem. I think if they were, instead of putting the numbers off the road on the laneway, if they put like Remelton on the left hand side, main town centre in the middle, or Church Hill on the left-hand side, on the ground, if you had it written on the ground, the direction of the road, people would be able to follow it better than using, say, like R252 or whatever the number of the phone road
is. That is a very good point, actually, that people won't know what the road numbers are, particularly.
No, they don't really know the road numbers, but if you've got Remelton, just the RM or something, in the middle of the road, and you have it then in the middle of the roundabout again, or Main Street for middle of the roundabout, and RM for the left-hand side, and CH for the left, or for the left-hand side for Churchill, you have a lot less bother. People know, they're able to follow the letters, they're able to follow it, no problem.
Yeah. A lot of people saying, Mark, they believe that there should have been Gardaí on the roundabout there to sort of help things out on Friday. You don't believe that would have been necessary?
No, I don't think so, because when I came on it there, it was normally at Russia, and it was operating the very best. I know what they're saying about the lights. There's an odd green light left on, but they're all on the. You're going on to the Blaney Road at that stage. There's nothing coming to meet you. That green light shining on your side.
Yeah, I did notice it was on the Blaney Road side right enough now when I saw them. But I still found that even the fact that there were lights green, I found my eyes being distracted toward them. I did find it a distraction that they were on, because you're then wondering, oh, hang on a tick, am I missing something here? That I think I personally would agree. I would have preferred they were off. I mean, either all on or off.
I would agree on them being turned off as well, and give it a week, even just give it a week to the sea. There's no harm in giving it a week. Like, the lights went up very rapid the last time, so they did. There was no question in it. They were just putting lights up, and that was it. But, if they wiring, put up good wiring signs, and put black bag all the traffic lights on the roundabout, and give it a go back to normal the way it was, to the try it, see how it goes.
It's only
a week, like, it's not as if it's going to cause any major problems, especially with schools being back on at the moment.
Yeah.
Like, Traffic's getting in and out of the town a lot better. They've put ramps up over Bunnygee and Wreck there. I understand the reason for the ramps, but like where they're positioned in Bunnygee, there's lorries hauling to businesses up there. They're having to slow right down, bump over these ramps and take off again. They're big lorries, they're carrying heavy loads. It's sore on them, so it is.
Yeah.
If the ramps had been positioned differently in Bunnygee, it might be a different story. But like, as it is now, for me, if I'm in Letterkenny and I'm going out to my dad's yard, I come out over Leck and come down the Coilion and still have to go around the roundabout, but you're queuing up to get traffic, whereas they've done away with it onto the section where you could cross the road out of my father's premises.
Yeah.
But, like, you're queuing then as you get round this roundabout, and it's sickening, so it is. It gets to it after a while. Like, I can see where road rage comes out of when you're sitting on that, that's for a wee while, like.
Can I ask you then something? I mean, you know, so something we talk about a lot about traffic in Letterkenny is the long-awaited, the Bonaghy link, the bridge over the Swilly, which would be very close to your dad's place, because I know one of the plans is to take it down there past the site of Arena 7, down by where the Kinnegar Brewery is, and then to go out there and hook up with the road at Manor, the road in Bonaghy, and go over the Swilly there. That's from right. there. I mean, you know, you believe the sooner that comes, the better. Would that be a fair assumption?
That would be a fair assumption, because it'll take a lot of traffic off the road for out past the farmers. You can, Bob Fay traffic could use that or so, or it's going to quite a different end of town anyway on the with the 10T plans. But it definitely would ease up and would leave it more like local traffic just for round where the McClanry, you know, to the Port Road.
Yeah.
But the road would take the bulk of the traffic away out of Letterkenny.
Right. Mark, listen, thanks very much indeed for your perspective on this. It's good to hear from you. And, it's an interesting one. We know there is a Letterkenny Municipal District meeting taking place this week. I would be very surprised if there wasn't some discussion about this at that particular meeting. And we'll see what the councillors and the officials have to say tomorrow.
Do you know
how I'm Mark, thank you very much indeed. I just want to remind you. By the way, that we had, and if you were listening to the show on Friday, it was an absolutely great show. We heard from the four finalists in the new local hero competition. The four finalists are Zoe McCauley, who's a 16-year-old singer-songwriter from Dunlow. We have Tessie O, a singer-songwriter duo from Derry, Jude McCandless and Callum Feeney. We have The Afades, no strangers to this programme, and they are also finalists, as is, and The Afades, all 17, by the way, and looking great for it. And then we have Owen Ferry, who's an 18-year-old singer-songwriter from Gwyddor. So we have a duo, we have a group, and we have a male singer-songwriter and a female singer-songwriter, all fantastic finalists, all did really well on the programme there on Friday with Greg. And just remind you that the voting lines are now open. We're choosing who's going to be the local winner of the Irish Music Hero that's then going to go on to the national competition, which is being run in conjunction with Hot Press Magazine. The vote link is in the Local Hero tab, which is available on the front page of our website, which is obviously highlandradio.com. So you go onto highlandradio.com, there's a big tab in big, friendly, luminous letters that says Local Hero. You can go in there and you can vote for your preferred choice. By the way, if you want to listen back to that programme on Friday, you can do so. It's available as a podcast on the website. You can search it on the Highland Radio Ireland app as well. So previous programmes are available for your listening pleasure. So you can listen back, as I said, go on to... you can watch it. In fact, you can go on to either the Highland Radio tab. The podcast from Friday is going to still be there. But that's just audio only. Or, as I said, you can watch it. It's probably up at our Facebook pages as well, I would imagine. But you'll certainly be able to get it on our YouTube channel, which is Highland Radio Ireland. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I was doing the 9 till noon show. And during that programme, I spoke to a Councillor Micheál Colum McGill-Aspach about the dangers of car parking in the vicinity of Errigal Mountain, and Micheál had sent us a video of cars parked on both sides of the road, and there was a lot of cars there. Another video was posted online by Councillor McGill-Aspach over the weekend, and I think it's fair to say there's about five or six times as many cars, and Councillor joins us on the line. Micheál, Maginois.
Imagine why did you don't have a snake story legally?
Good, Marcus. Micheál, as I said, you sent us a video a month or so ago when I was on this programme. The video you posted at the weekend, it seemed to me there was at least four times as many cars this time.
There is. I put up a video on my TikTok. I feel a wee bit old to be on TikTok, but anyway, our team here insisted that I'd be on TikTok. But anyway, I'm on TikTok and I posted it on Facebook and or TikTok as well, and I didn't expect to get the response that I got, and the reason I posted it is it's really important to make people aware that if you are parking on the side of the road at the mountain, that to be conscious of your children, be conscious of yourself, you know, opening your doors, walking freely across a road that is designated to drive at 100 kilometres an hour isn't the best way to go about it. And I have a concern. I'm local councillor in the area. I'd be up in the mountain myself. I have been going to these meetings since I've been elected as councillor on the works on the mountain. There's an unbelievable committee in Dunluce that has worked tirelessly over many years on this project and other projects. And even as we speak, there's three lads, a shout out to the three lads who are up fixing part of the walk that was washed away there in the heavy rains. But on Saturday, I was heading out to watch Irua agus Ní Mura on the 14s play, and Cohard has the Irua, and unfortunate for Ní Mura, the local team, but I couldn't get over the amount of cars. I've never seen as many cars as there was on Saturday. There must have been at least 200 cars and more to come during the day. And I know there is a master plan being put in place. There is a consultant from Donegal involved at the moment in Dunluce to look at a master plan for the whole area, similar to what I'm working at for Maharorty. And the part of that master plan and that discussion, the consultation with the local community and us as councillors, will be to look at the parking. But I just think that between now and then, because nothing happens in the council, and I'm not being disrespectful to all those working on it, nothing happens in a hurry within the council. And on that basis, I think we need to put something in place. The council had worked hand in hand with the local Cusha Farbera, and I couldn't praise our council staff enough in relation to the project and in relation to Argyll. Absolutely unbelievable, brilliant work. But we need to do something in relation to the parking. It is not safe. You saw the letter that your man sent me that nearly knocked down the two, three children a couple of weeks ago. That's really could have been a very different story. I was talking to yourself, Donal, in relation to that, and it could have been a very different story.
Now, we know that Friday and Saturday had exceptionally good weather, and they were fantastic days. I mean, probably the two best days we've had over the whole summer period. So it was always going to be predictable that there'd be a lot of people would go, okay, this is the day we're going to do Argyll. And having been up there myself in cloud and fog, it's a very different experience being up there when the sun is shining. There was always going to be a large amount of people heading for Argyll. There was always going to be a large amount of people heading for Glenveagh over Friday and Saturday. But that needs to be predicted, and we need, as you've said in the past, we need to get that parking situation sorted, because especially with that new pathway done and such wonderful work being done to bring people to Argyll, it's a bit like we're bringing the people and we're opening the mountain up to so many others, but we're not just giving them somewhere to place their cars, and that needs to be thought of. When one suggestion someone mentioned even was, well, would you develop a car park in Dunluce and even shuttle people over and back to the mountain? Would that be potentially a runner?
I think the voices we really need to hear are from the Cusha Farbera. They're the people who live in the village. They're the ones who are the keepers of the mountain, if you want to use that terminology. They're the ones that are walking that land on a daily basis, and it's their community. So I think it's going to be really important to hear what the people have to say. I think it's important that the wider community in the county would have a say in the consultation as well. I'm meeting with Glenn Vehe today, the management of the castle, and that on the issue of the education and the school tours being stopped. And one of the things that I was going to use the opportunity was to talk to Glenn Vehe just in relation to the mountain, because I don't think there is an appetite within Parks and Wildlife to develop the car park. I don't want to say that's definite, but that's my understanding. And there's other alternatives that we have to look at to try to make sure that we're taking people to the mountain and making sure that they're coming safe and keeping the local community safe as well. And to develop what we've developed, it's been brilliant. There's other works that we're trying to develop as well, which is the railway walks. And the thing is, for me, it's a bit like a good number of years ago. There was a huge push within the council to bring people into West, beautiful West Donegal and Gaeltacht, especially around the camper vans and that, right? Mm-hmm. But they didn't put anything in place once they landed. And this is something wee bit similar, and I'm not trying to downplay any of the fantastic hard work that's been going on for years and years, but it's a pity that we weren't able to move at the same pace as we were doing the path as well.
Yeah, and there is a conversation to be had here, because, as you said, and rightly so, the last thing you want to do is develop a big, huge, ugly car park in what is one of the most beautifully scenic places, not only in this county, but in this country and beyond. It's an absolutely amazing drive, and I never tire of doing that drive. And who could tire of that drive? And the views of Dunluce, etc. Fantastic. You don't want to put a big, huge car park smack in the middle of it, but by the same token, you do have to face the reality. There's 200-plus cars, and the better you make those facilities at Errigal, the more and more cars are going to want to get there.
And
that does have to be sorted and looked at very carefully, and whatever imagination we can apply, be it shuttles, be it whatever, but something will have to be done to make sure that everyone is satisfied, and perhaps shuttles might be the way to go.
Yeah, and maybe it is, and we need to look at what's best practice in other parts of the country and the other parts of Europe as well. And I think that's really, really important. And they have been doing the likes of this. And like I said, Cossie Fairbairn and Lugia are the voices that we really need to hear, because they're the ones that put this together in conjunction. What other agencies and Corlea Conda Gunningall playing a very, very central role, because for us as councillors, we do pick projects and we prioritise projects, and Nargal was one of the projects that we prioritised, which allowed then for our staff to be freed up and to invest all that time and energy into making sure that we got the funding that we in West Donegal deserve. Because like that, they often say that Donegal's the forgotten county, and we in West Donegal feel that we're the forgotten part of the county itself. When you look at the lack of infrastructure that we don't have. So I think it's really important that people engage in this consultation. But it's important also is that this isn't a long, drawn-out process, and that means you aren't having this conversation next year or the year after.
And as we say, hopefully the next conversation isn't a conversation after two children run out onto the road from a car, and it's a different outcome to the outcome we had 4 weeks ago.
Absolutely, and I would say to people, and I think one of the comments on my TikTok was interesting, was saying, look, if this was a weekday, if the weekday was really, really busy, or very good, sorry, in terms of the weather, like, you'd have a huge amount of cars there as well, because there are some people who holiday in September, and with the lorries in and out to the industrial estate that we have, like, it just makes it very, very different. It makes it far more dangerous, and I know that we're going to move very shortly to reduce speeds. That'll help, no doubt about it. But I would say to people, because I've seen people, I would drive very, very, very slowly when I pass there. Generally, I drive slowly, but when I pass there, I drive very, very, very slowly with my hazards on. But there was days there I've seen cars going out there at 100, maybe 100 plus miles an hour, plus the cars on both sides of the road. You know, you'd want to cop on a wee bit, like, if you're thinking that's cool and that's okay, it's actually not. It's not.
Yeah, as someone once said,
for the sake of 10 seconds, yeah. Like,
as someone would say, it's a limit, it's not a target. Councillor Micheál, Colinguera Gaspag, Gura Maha, Gut Micheál. Micheál Slán, that's Councillor Micheál Colum there. Connor says, great to hear the good work of new facilities highlighted on Highland Radio. And absolutely, I mean, fantastic work's being done at Errigal. I mean, the first time I went up Errigal, as is the case with many, many people, it was the first third of that walk was an absolute bog. There's now pathways. I've actually not done it with the full pathway yet. But I mean, you know, I remember going out, someone said to me how hard was Errigal. I said, look, the hardest part of it was trying to get through that bloody bog at the start and then at the end. That was the hardest part. Now there's a new pathway, and it was washed away in some of the rain, and a lot of work was done. Helicopters brought in to do a lot of restoration work on that pathway. And as Micheál said, people up there today working on that pathway. And thank you very much to all involved in that. I want to say hello to Paul and to Anthony and to Duncan. They've been watching us on Facebook. Duncan makes a comment. We referenced the church in the Church of the Immaculate Conception in the grounds of Thornhill College, the old Thornhill College in Derry, and we know the local community want to retain that as a church. They've appealed to the Derry Diocesan decision to decommission the church to the Vatican. The Vatican has sided with Derry Diocese. We understand the sisters want to actually sell that particular site. Duncan says, why are they closing that church? Was it not Vatican II that said the people are in control of the church? Technically, what Vatican II, as I understand it, what Vatican II said was the people are the church. The institutions and the property of the church, and I'm not being facetious when I say this, Vatican II said the people are the church. Now, the church, the institution, and the church, the community of people, are in a sense two different things. The institution controls the management and the infrastructure and everything else, and decisions are being taken with regards to the management and infrastructure of the church's buildings, etc., which is a very different thing. Vatican II said the people are the church. They didn't say the people are in control of the church, and certainly in terms of control of the day-to-day running of the church, that very much lies with the clergy. And I don't want that to sound facetious. It isn't being facetious. But I know what you're saying, Duncan, with relation to Vatican II. But I think control of the church and the church's identity as a community of people are sort of two slightly different things. You're welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. I am joined in studio by two very special guests, because anyone who is interested in the arts in this region will no doubt be conversant with the Millennium Forum in Derry. And I find it, I mean, they talk about things that make you suddenly feel old. I remember a couple of years ago getting a guided tour of the site of the Millennium Forum. It was about two-thirds constructed, and a group of us all wearing hard hats were taken into the building site and shown where the auditorium was going to be. There was no seats in yet, of course, shown where the stage was going to be and everything else. And it was really exciting, and we were really looking forward to this wonderful new... And I would have said, how long ago? That was a couple of years ago, yeah. And the theatre celebrates its 25th anniversary in 2026. And that's exciting in itself. But what's being done to celebrate that anniversary is very, very interesting. We're joined in studio by Mags Anderson, who is a project manager, and by Brian Foster, who is a local playwright, and not just a local playwright, one of the most prolific playwrights in this country and further afield, on this island indeed. It's a 2-year project that Brian is going to be involved in, being managed, as we said, by Mags. And the idea is, we have Brian with us, one of our classic playwrights, brilliant playwright, very well known. But where are the young, upcoming playwrights? Where are the new talent? Where is the new generation? And Mags, starting with yourself, basically, you're on a mission to find them.
That is it. So to celebrate, this is going to be one of the multiple projects that we're going to be running for to celebrate our 25th anniversary. We are looking for the next Brian Foster. Mm-hmm. We're looking for all those writers, creators that are at home thinking, oh, I'd love to do that, but how could I start? So we are giving you your stepping stone to have your own production on the Millennium Forum stage in 2026.
This is going to work with scripts being invited. Basically, they send the script into yourselves, it's assessed, it's read through, and at the end of this, one of the scripts will be professionally produced on the stage. It's going to be a long process, and Brian, you're going to be centrally involved in that process. You must be looking forward to this.
Very, very much so, yeah. It's something that I think is so necessary at this time. It's a great opportunity for someone to get on the trail that I set out on so many years ago, and we're going to help them all the way we can, and by the time this exercise is finished, we hope to have a lovely new play, mm-hmm. and maybe a new name that people haven't heard of before, and of course, we're going to actually pay them too, so there's going to be a £3,000 first prize for whoever gets through. But as I emphasise when I'm doing these things there, that there'll be no losers in this game.
Yeah.
Everybody who sets out on this journey is going to be a winner. So there will be one overall winner, of course. Mm-hmm. But everybody will gain. And it's the sort of opportunity that I wish that I'd had all those years ago. But I had to do it the hard way. There's no other way of putting it. But this is just a wee leg up to somebody who maybe is sitting there and they love writing, but they just can't figure out, how do you get from page to stage? So this is our this is our little scheme that will allow them to do just that.
Is there an opportunity here for mentoring? Because I'm sure any budding young playwright would really appreciate, you know, the chance even to get some input from yourself, to get some more people like yourself, and the opportunity to actually have conversations and see where they're
what's going to happen is this Thursday, the 12th of September, we're having an open day in the forum from 12 o'clock until 2, where you can ask us, ask Brian, any questions that you have. And online as well, we have a tab on the website where Brian has generously given us 2 samples of his plays, so we can see what way the structure to structure to play. And if anybody is interested, Thursday will be brilliant to come along and have an open conversation. But also, I'm always at the end of the phone, at the end of the email as well, that you can ask questions. Don't be having a fear of, oh, this is too big or this is too much. This is only the start of it. So to get your synopsis and your 6 pages of the play submitted by the 18th of October, then the whittling down process, and then it will be a shortlisted group. We'll get mentored then with Brian regularly, and then they'll work towards how's this end show going to look like. And then by July, hopefully next year, we'll have our winner. So it'll be from January to July where the mentorship will happen, and they'll be working with them. So it's not just give us your play and then we'll choose it. No, we'll work with these, and Brian will work with you, and they'll develop little pieces that he thinks that, no, pull this bit out or work more on that.
Of course, yeah.
Do you know, so...
And presumably you're looking for a 2-act, 90 to 100, 120-minute play. Yeah. What are the parameters in terms of the structure?
Less than five actors.
So we're going to make it a commercial... 5 or less characters in your play. As you've just said there, we'd be looking, the length of it would be roughly about 70 to 90 pages would constitute your normal play. And because it's a commercial play, it needs to have a break.
Yeah.
Because all theatres want their 15-minute break at the interval.
That beer has to be sold somewhere.
So they've got to... I'll be working closely with them. Could I emphasize again that at the beginning, all we want from them is 6 pages. Yeah. You don't have to have your full play written. So you can have an idea for your play. Just get those first 6 pages down, get those into us, and then they can work with me. And I'll take them through all the stages, all the hurdles that I've crossed in writing plays, and show them all the do's and don'ts, and the pitfalls, and what how to move the play from concept to finish, and how to work. And one of the things that a lot of people struggle with is dialogue. How do you get characters speaking to one another? And believe it or not, that becomes one of the easiest things that you can do.
But it must start off hard. I remember I did see a play once, and it had a trade union official, and the trade union official did not talk. The trade union official pontificated constantly. It was as though someone had gone into an old ICTW or whatever and just took a series of speeches and just randomly assigned 2 sentences to this bit of dialogue and 2 sentences. They never conversed.
Uh-huh.
They preached constantly. And I thought, and I know exactly what you mean when you say that, when you get into it, that actually to try and get dialogue, you want to say something, you want it to have meaning, you want it to be meaningful and to have impact and to have, but it also has to sound like a chat that somebody is going to have with somebody else.
Yeah.
Well, the great thing about playwriting is you have got to hear those characters in your head. So if you've got 5 different characters in the play, you've got to be slightly schizophrenic insofar as that you've got to have 5 voices in your head. They can't all be the same, because everybody's got their own little mannerisms of speech. But that actually becomes the norm. So what begins, difficult, but I'll take them through that and I'll show them how to break down speech. And how to so that they don't give one character a big chunk of speech while the other guy stands nodding and you get it so often. So what you do is you share that speech between the 2 or between 3 people.
Is there any constriction, and I don't see anything in the immediate things I'm reading, is there any constriction in terms of what sort of play it is? Is it a drama? Is it a comedy? Is it contemporary? Is it a historic? Are you saying to people, write a play and we will decide based on how good the play is and how commercially viable we believe it may be. It can be a comedy, it can be a drama. You're not necessarily saying, write us the penultimate history of Derry in 70 pages.
The only thing that we don't want in is musicals. Because we're just not equipped to do a commercial musical from start to finish. And I haven't worked in musicals either, so I'm certainly not equipped. So, any topic, any subject whatsoever, be it providing it's doable on stage.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want helicopters landing on stage, as in Miss Saigon, things like this. We can't do that. So this is all part of the process of writing. You've got to do everything within a constrained setting.
And with the age range too, we're going to get a vast variety of plays and ideas coming in, because it's from 16 plus. And when we say plus, we could be 116. If you have a play in the house and you want to do it, there's no age.
Absolutely.
So there's no limit.
But people can't be precious about their work. If someone is going to submit here, be aware that if you get into the process of the last six, then you're going to be sitting down with an expert like Brian. And it's highly unlikely, Brian, that you're going to read a 70-page script and go, that's fine. It's going to change.
Yes.
And there's going to be a lot of talk and a lot of discussion on it. In terms of, what you're asking people to do. As you say, there's no age limit. There's no limit on the subject matter, and most importantly, there's no limit on imagination, and there's no limit on what you want people. I mean, it could well be that you're going to get something really interesting, really new and really innovative here.
Yeah.
And it's important to say to people, look, don't constrain yourself. And most importantly, don't write the sort of play Brian Foster would write.
Yes.
Because Brian writes those already, and he's quite good at it.
Yeah, yeah. The thing that you hit on the word there, that everybody needs, and you've got to be able to dream your own scenarios and just imagine that scenario then. The beautiful thing about playwriting is that it's as near as you'll get to having a dream and having that dream come true.
Yeah.
Because you conjure up all these things from your imagination, these characters, the storyline and such, and then you see it come alive on stage.
Mm-hmm.
And there can't be... It's a unique situation. It's a unique, I've been through it many, many times, and it never loses its interest when you see the first night of your play and the lights go down. Suddenly that story that evolved in front of your computer and came from your head, and those characters, that story, and it all comes alive on stage.
Yeah.
It's a very beautiful thing.
It must indeed be. Brian, there should be a set of headphones there beside you. Could you put those on for a minute, if you would? Because we're joined by a guest on line one, and it's Anna. Anna, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Do you know Brian Foster, perchance?
Yes, well, I'll tell you. I might just not know personally, but I know of him very much so, because I acted in the play in the Millennium Forum many years ago. It was called The Miracle of Ballymore.
I remember,
and
you, Anna.
It was directed by Jonathan Burgess.
That's correct.
Hello, Brian.
Hello, how are you? God, I haven't heard from you a long time now, Anna. Were you living in Mobile?
Yes, I'm living in Mobile here, So, but I remember that play so well. It was great. I remember Ozzy Bryson was in it, and
Ozzy
Jim Leckie, to name a few of two of the people that were
in it. God, you're taking me back now.
Indeed, I did.
It's a nice memory, though.
And the other lady that did the singing, Margaret Keith.
Margaret was
very young.
And then she went on then
time.
To have a wonderful career as a singer.
Mm-hmm. She did indeed. So I remember that with fondness. I have photographs that, of course, I've kept. I've done a lot of drama in my time, locally.
I know you have. So listen, do you do any writing?
No, I don't. I'm of an age group now, I just enjoy other people's writings and things like that.
Okay. It's lovely to hear from you, by the way.
Right, and you too. So, and the best of good luck. And many a time I look back on that time with great fondness. It was great. And cast at the time. It was absolutely wonderful.
It was. We had a really good time then, didn't we? And it's lovely to hear from you again.
Yeah.
And to hear that you're keeping well.
Thanks very much, and good luck with future productions.
All the best.
And a thank you very much indeed for calling. And listen, if you do change your mind about the writing, I've no doubt that Mags and Brian would be absolutely delighted to hear from you. But listen, Anna, it was great to hear from you. That was a great play, Miracle of Ballymore. And in fact, it may well have been around about that time I spoke to you too, Brian, I think. Thank you very much indeed, Anna. Mags, I mean, from your point of view, to be project managing this and other celebrations from an AM forum, I mean, that must be a really, really interesting job to have, because you've got from now until 2026 to put something very special together.
Oh, we're really excited. Being from the town myself and being a drama student, this is just the dream for anybody. And to the fact that we are offering somebody to put a full-blown production on the Millennium Forum stage as part of our celebratory year, which will be great, and it will be non-stop, and you'll be one of the headline performances because this is our scheme. It's celebrating our 25 years, and we're putting all of our professionalism behind your production.
Yeah, and the great thing about the forum too is, I mean, like any theatre, everyone you speak to is going to have their own particular memories of something they saw, and you can gather 100 people together, and you'll get 100 completely different stories. I mean, and I've had some great moments in that theatre, from gigs by Neil Hannon and Divine Comedy to I actually had the pleasure of being on that stage once. I was in La Traviata with Northwest Opera and Spark Opera way back. It was that was 10 years ago, maybe 9 years ago. But I have been on that stage myself, and it's a great stage.
It is
a great stage.
It's actually the biggest, I think it's the biggest purpose-built stage in Ireland, isn't it, in any theatre?
I think they have, it's one, there's the Waterfront and Greenland and Letterkenny, funnily enough, and the Millennium Forum are three of the biggest. What happened was, as productions got bigger and as sets got bigger, set design changed and stage design changed. And I think from the point of view of the tech, from speaking to people involved in tech over the years, what they've said is what the new theatres are really giving is far more room backstage for sets and for set construction and things like that.
Yeah.
I know in the case of Anne Greenan, the late Danny McGlinchey was very involved in the planning stages for a new theatre. Way back when he was doing musicals and shows in every village hall and pub and nightclub that would have him. And one of the things he did was he brought in Ray McNally, the actor, who would have been an old schoolmate of his in St. Eunan's. And he brought Ray McNally in and he said, right, Ray, you sit down with the architects and tell them what you need as an actor and as a director. And he says, well, this is what we need. We need the green room near the stage. We need enough room backstage to bring in sets and park a lorry and all that.
Yeah.
And that's come into the more modern theatre designs. So the Waterfront, Millennium Forum, and Grin in Letterkenny, the newer theatres, they all have these fantastic facilities. I know a lot of people really look forward to coming to them because it's a lot easier than getting into some of the smaller theatres that have been there for years and weren't necessarily designed to have lorries pull up around the back.
That's it. And we have got all our West End tour and productions coming as well. Yeah. And just the buzz from before COVID and then coming back. Like, I remember going into Panto and hearing the school children, like, my job as education officer in the forum, and hearing the school children, I just burst into tears because it was just the fun and the love of theatre just came back.
I know exactly what you mean when you say that. I know exactly what you mean,
Infectious.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Brian Foster, legendary playwright, and Mags Anderson, project manager, looking forward to the anniversary of the Millennium Forum being celebrated in 2026. And just the closing date for the submission of what you're looking for, just to wrap this one up, you're looking for the first 6 pages of a play and a synopsis of the whole play. And based on that, you'll take it from there.
Yeah, and then this Thursday, if you're free, come up from 12 until 2. That's for Thursday, the 12th of September. Up in the Millennium Forum, and we are always there at the end of the phone as well if you have any questions.
And finally, the closing date for those submissions
is Friday the 18th of October at 5 p.m.
Excellent. Mags, Brian, it's been an absolute pleasure. We wish you very well with the planning for the celebrations, and we look forward to the celebrations themselves. Thanks. But for now, thank you very much indeed. We'll take a short break. Headlines with Michaela are next.